So it's a as I do my shiur that I give in Shiva Kotel, what I like to try to do is take different concepts, so psychological or educational concepts, start to show the roots in our Masorah, and from there try to take some practical examples and even practical suggestions about what can be done in our own lives, and in this case, in the lives of our children. Draw your attention to the first source on the source sheet, which is actually from yesterday's Haftorah. In Sefer Zechariah, which is a discussion about the Nebuah of Zechariah and a vision he had about Yoshua Kohen Gadol, it says, Ko Amar Hashem Tzvakot, Indra Chai Telech. So this is Kadosh Baruch Hu's message being given to Yoshua the Kohen Gadol. And it says that if Indra Chai Telech, Beit Mishmarti Tishmor, meaning if you're basically, if you keep Torah mitzvahs, Vigam Atat Hadin at Beiti, and you'll promote Tzedek, justice, and you'll also respect the Beit HaMikdash. And I'll make you a walker, a mover, between those who are immobile, standing still. And the reference there is to the malachim, the other angels that were in this vision that Zechariah had. It's a very unusual thing. What exactly does that mean? Many of the commentaries there, not among the Rishonim, but the later, for example, our Tzadik Kohen of Lublin, Sfat Emet, I see this as something referenced to something a bit deeper. Now, I'll show you the inside if you can look at it. This is from Sefer Pri Tzadik from Ratzadik HaKohen of Lublin. Let's pick it up on the second line, right in the middle of the page. He says, Shaha'adam kol yamei chayav, tzarich liyot holech. That a person all day's life has to be a walker. And again, this doesn't mean the guy is running the New York City Marathon. It means a person has to be always someone who's moving. Kemoshen Amar ki holech ha'adam el beit olamo. The person is always going to beit olamo. Here doesn't mean we bought a house. We said we'll be here forever, but that doesn't sound very good. Turns out there's only in Hebrew they call a cemetery beit almin, the eternal home. So that's not quite as good. But the idea is that a person is always moving, not moving forward. The hamalachim heim ondim, but an angel is called someone who stands. He's quoting our pasuk. Adam calls manshu chai all the time that a person is alive. Holech lamala b'chol pam. He's always got to be moving forward. He's got to be advancing. Moshe Rabbeinu olav shalom amar lo chaod latzei b'lavo. This is in Parshas Zot HaBracha. Moshe at the end of his life says, "I can no longer move about. Can't go anymore." Shekevan shel yuchal yod od holech. So once Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer able to move to advance. And that's Moshe no longer had any business in this world. In other words, even Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all, once he was finished moving, that means his time was up. It's a beautiful idea, and I think that the idea here is that we're contrasting man with angels. We typically think about people as something that's imperfect, and angels, something like, I'm no angel. Lo nitna Torah l'malach esharet, which is typically meant to be, you don't need to be perfect, right? God only expects you to do the best you can as a human being. I like to suggest something that's basically an alternate reading of that, which is when the Torah is only given to people and the Torah is not intended for Malach HaShar, for angels, there's an idea that when Moshe is receiving the Torah in Har Sinai, there's a discussion between the angels regarding whether the Torah is more appropriate for them. Maybe it shouldn't be released to mankind. And one of the things that comes up as part of that discussion is that the angels really have no need for perfection. Again, I'm not here to discuss the what exactly that means. But the message there, certainly for us, is that the Torah is there, the job of the Torah and halacha is there to perfect man, to help us grow, and is not relevant for those people that are not growth, they're not involved in growth. I've heard so much before that you wouldn't want to go to a psychologist to get stock tips. I would certainly be well qualified there. I'm not the right person to come for financial advice, but I know enough to know that if you want to buy a stock, you don't want to buy the best company. You want to buy a stock in a company that you think is going to be better in 10 years or 5 years than it is today. It might be a bad company. Whereas if you think a company has amazing profits and it's going to just keep churning out exactly the same profits for infinity, that's not a company that's going to be a worthwhile investment. Because that person, that stock is going to just keep worth the same. And you're not going to buy, if you buy a stock that's worth 100, and it's going to be worth 100 in 10 years, even though 100 maybe it sounds better than, it may be a very high number, you'd be better off buying a stock that's worth a dollar, and in 5 years it's going to be worth $5. And that's the idea. And Torah is really given not for omdim, meaning for people that are at perfection. The Torah is really given for holchim, people that are on the move. Or to paraphrase the Maharal, the idea of a Torah is to be given to people that are going in the direction of perfection. It didn't rhyme when he said it, but El Hashleimut. And I think the idea then, if we just try to bring it back to our topic, is that the Torah is really there to be a Ben Torah or a Bat Torah, is to be someone who's a holich, someone who's constantly on the move. And the alternative is a person who's fixed, like a malach, an omid, and that's something that's antithetical to our Torah worldview. These two ideas of a holich and an omid are were put out in different terminology by Dr. Carol Dweck, who's a psychologist originally at Columbia University and now is at Stanford. And the terminology that she used was the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. If you'd like, you can look at the graphic on the bottom of the first page there. The idea of a fixed mindset is the idea that your abilities are fixed. It's unchangeable. In other words, what you are what you are. Dr. Dweck points out that one of the problems with the fixed mindset is that if people, again, it goes both ways. If you are bad, if you're deficient, if you can't do something, you're stuck. That's all there is to it. But actually, it's the other side is bad too. In other words, if you believe that you're awesome, and you're being told all the time about how awesome you are, whether it's in basketball or learning or academics, right? If you believe that it's fixed, that I am an excellent student, right? Then that praise is going to get into your head in the sense, if you have a fixed mindset, I don't need to do anything. I don't need to work in order to improve. In other words, I've already made it. And her research actually has shown that people that with a fixed mindset, with the belief that you are what you are, and it's permanent, meaning it's a, in psychological parlance, it's a trait, meaning that's a fixed thing about you, those people actually stop putting in effort. Her big thing actually was that we should be very careful about praising our children when they're young, because in particular for gifted kids, but even kids in general, we praise them when they're young, it tends to turn off their ability to put in more effort, because they believe they've got it. Got it made. She contrasts this with the idea of a growth mindset. The growth mindset believes that talent and ability is fluid, that it can change over time, that it can improve with work. And by the way, just presumably can also deteriorate with neglect. In other words, what you are is not necessarily who you'll be. And she, again, you can look at the graphic there. There's a series of experiments which she and her colleagues did over quite a number of years, demonstrating how people with a fixed mindset and a growth mindset react to different opportunities in life.
I have as an example a parent who told, shall we say, the first child that some people are just not good at standardized tests, like SAT and whatnot, and unfortunately that filters down to the siblings and so forth. But obviously there are courses and methods to improve one's abilities for standardized testing. How do we undo that fixed notion, especially as conveyed by a parent?
Excellent. And that's what they want to get to. So I'm just a little bit more here. Then I want to get to some real tachlis, which is how do you change that? But I think underlying the question is, I think that which is more important, is that the younger you get to them, the easier it is to sort of build in your kids a growth mindset. I mean, I get all the data that she presents, and it's a very nice book if you'd like to read. It's called Mindset. It came out in 2006, I think. Is about this idea that consistently the people that are successful in life are those people that have a growth mindset. To be fair, she points out that most people are some combination of the two. It's not like you're completely growth, and people tend to overestimate. I said, you read these things and it's like, that's the other guy. I know, of course, that we're a work in progress. People tend to overestimate that, but in any event, the people with a fixed mindset tend to, when they make a mistake, and this is one of the biggest things, people with a fixed mindset tend to make a mistake. What they'll do is they'll refuse to admit they make a mistake. They get very defensive, right? So why would a person with a fixed mindset get defensive? Well, because, again,
they think they're perfect.
Well, it's not just that they think they're perfect, because they may not. They might think that they're awful. But with a person with a fixed mindset, their defensive is that they feel the need to defend themselves and show that really they're not, that they didn't make a mistake, because they're defined by their mistakes. In other words, if I make a mistake, then I am a mistake. In other words, I'm someone who will continue to err at this particular problem. Take an example of the standardized test, and if I did well poorly in my SATs, I'm going to try to show that it wasn't me, it was the test taker, it was the guy who didn't let me go take a break, it was the fan was too hot, the lights were too off, I don't know. Things like that, because again, if I did poorly, I'm going to continue to do poorly, because I'm a fixed asset. I might cover things up. Right? I might try to hide the mistake I made. problem. I might cheat because again I'm refusing to, it's refuse to know the idea of refuse to lose, but taken to a distorted point where I might actually try to cheat in order to not lose, because again losing means that I'm a loser. It means that I'm someone that's going to continue to lose. I'll show you, if you look at the bottom of the page, at the first page, there's two interesting examples from Chaim Shmulevitz. The first one is, I look at the second paragraph, it says, Ha de Kaimalan, Avera Gorerat Avera. Alright, the Mishnah paragraph says, one Avera leads to another one. He points out also that the Mishnah is that one Mitzvah leads to another. What's the idea that one Avera leads to another Avera? So Chaim Shmulevitz says, Hugame Haitaima, it's the same idea. She'im lo yamshich darko hara'a. Now, let's say a person doesn't have error, or let's even our parlance makes a mistake. So if he won't continue and do that same error again, or do that same mistake again, right? What's that saying? Let's say he'll do differently. What's he implicitly saying about what he did yesterday? It's about now. Today is Sunday, so today on Sunday I do differently than I did yesterday on Shabbos. So I'm implicitly saying that what I did on Shabbos was wrong. Right, and I'm unwilling to admit the fact that what I did yesterday was wrong. Why? Because again, my whole concern is that my idea that me as a person, as a talent, I'm a fixed asset, meaning I'm not going to change. Right, and by I'm unwilling to make a negative comment about myself or to admit I made a mistake, because then I have no ability to do something different, and therefore people like this are much more likely to continue and make more mistakes. He gives an extreme example. This is from a Sefer Melech Malach. He says, "B'yamav banach Chiel Beit Eli Yericho." The story about someone named Chiel rebuilt Yericho. The Aviram bechoro yisada. He laid the foundation with his eldest Aviram. Sagiv tziiro hitziv dlataha, and he built the doors with his youngest Sagiv. Kedvar Hashem asher diber b'yadosho benun. Rashi explains there. It says that he yisada meit beno bechoro. So the Yeshua had put a curse. Whoever rebuilds Yericho, so with his eldest son, his eldest son will die when he lays the foundation of the city, and his sons will just keep dying. Kids will keep dying until he finishes the building project. Rashi says that's exactly what happened. That his eldest son died when he started building the city. The kavar bahalach, the kavar kol banav, and each of his kids died one after the other as he continued the rebuilding Yericho. Ad shemeta acharon bahatzavat dilatot, until the last kid died when they put up the doors. Shmulevitz says, "V'haroei yishtomein." You read about this, you have to be shocked. V'harei ra'ach Chiel be'inav keitzad nevuato shel Yeshua binun mitkayamet b'holechet. Again, we read Tanakh. We don't think about the. We might don't become a psychologist, but you have to think about what's going on in the heads of the people that are. He says, "Chiel's look. He's building it, and his kids are dying one after the other. So he continues the project. But at some point, he's got to say maybe something is not quite right. What should I be doing differently?" He says, so the Shmulevitz says, "V'hu mekaberet banav bazeh harzeh, v'echel mamshich b'vinyan yiricho ad acharon shebehem." How is it possible he continued building until the last of his kids had passed away? Haytachin davar kaseh elhein davarim. You wouldn't, I wouldn't believe it if it didn't happen. So the Shmulevitz says, how do you explain it? He says, "Lo haya Chiel misugal hafsik b'vinyan, keich yodeh shetah." The Chiel was not capable of stopping the building project, because to stop the building project would have been a tacit admission that he had made a mistake. Harsh comment says that he'd rather bury every single one of your children than admit that he made a mistake. Yeah, because people are so, again, we have self-preservation. Again, this is an extreme example. But as an extreme example, we're so sensitive to protect our own ego, to protect our own self-confidence, our self-esteem, that we'd rather sometimes continue with a mistake, because to do otherwise is to make something wrong with me. So Dr. Dweck is going to say that this is an example of essentially of the fixed mindset, because it's predicated on this idea that who I am is who I'm going to be tomorrow, who I'm going to be going forward. And that's something that doesn't necessarily need to be true. Rather, the person with the growth mindset is someone that says, no, I make a mistake today, that's not a problem. Who I am today is not necessarily who I'm going to be tomorrow. This is Dr. Martin Seligman, who's a former psychologist of the last 30, 40 years, points out this is one of the most common cognitive errors that people make. People tend to assume that facts about them, whether it's a mistake or even positive things, we tend to make the assumption that they're permanent, and very often that they're temporary. With my patients, with my students, I often end up quoting two psukim in this regard. If we turn to the other second page of the Koruk, the two psukim I end up quoting the most are these. The first one is that Kisheva Yipol Tzadik Vekam, Urshaim Yikashlu Bera'ah. It's from Mishlei. That the tzaddik falls down seven times, but gets up. And the Rosh is really not able to. Or again, the other one, another reference from Micha. Al tismachi oyavti li, ki nafalti kamti, ki yeshev b'choshech Hashem orli. And the idea is that when I fall, I rise. And when I sit in the darkness, Hashem is the light for me. The idea here, again, if we can translate into what we've been talking about, the idea of a halich, or of a person that's growth-oriented, when that person falls down, that's not a problem, right? If a person believes, Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vekam, right? That person, it's not a problem to fall down, because that's what it means to be a tzaddik, that means to be a halich, a person that's growth-oriented, I fall down, I get up again. Or again, in Micha, it's Kina Falti Kamti, so I fall down, I get up. I can't tell you how many times I sit with people, and they're stuck on the ground, and they just don't know how to get up, because the assumption is that it's a permanent problem, right? It's a trait. And they don't understand that I'm down, but I have the ability to get up again. I'm very much not a financial person, but there's this idea of throwing good money after bad. Right? People would rather continue to make a mistake and pour more money into a mistake that they're making rather than cut their losses and admit that they did was wrong and chart a new course. A beautiful analogy I once heard, if you using Waze to get a certain place, and let's say you make a mistake and you take the wrong path. So Waze doesn't care. Waze is just going to say, okay, make a left or make a U-turn. The Waze doesn't care. There's no judgment. We as parents have to try to impart that message to our kids, honestly to ourselves, which is that if there's a mistake that you make, it's about just charting a new course and saying, how can I re-navigate? Take it even one step further. There's an idea which is you find Yalkut Shimoni, which is later popularized by Chaim Shalevitz, by Rini Yona. Yalkut Shimoni on this pasuk in Micha says, actually I didn't tell him, but it says that Al tismachi oyavti bi ki nafalti kamti. He says ilulei shenafalti lo kamti. It's not just that when I fall down I have the ability to get up. He says ilulei, meaning if not for the fact that I fell down, I would not have the ability to get up. It's the very fact that I fell down, the very fact that I've tasted defeat, tasted failure, that's really what enables me to be able to move forward. And this is really, if you know Rashi and Chumash points out that the word ki can mean six different things. Sometimes it means when, which is, I think, the pshat in the pasuk here, but ki can also mean because. And the pasuk again is ki nafalti kamti, because I fell down, I got up. And that, I think, is an important message to be able to give to ourselves and to our children. Going back to the question, is that how can we inculcate this mindset in ourselves and in our kids? And I think the first step to be able to do this, again, very tachlis, is to, Dr. Dweck points out, is to help our children understand ourselves, the way the mind works. You know, to think that I'm not a person, that I'm not a math guy, or I'm not a person that gets standardized tests. Again, that's a fact. You know, that's something we can test or not. It's not necessarily true. Is it true that some people are better in math than others? Probably. Okay. But intelligence and performance, we're going to get to the next part of the lecture, which is intelligence and performance are much less about our genetics. Right? It's much more about our effort, which we'll get to in a minute. But the most important thing is to teach your kids and ourselves that who you are today is not necessarily who you're going to be tomorrow. It's much more a function of what you're going to do better. If we messed up, you didn't do well in your SATs, not a problem. I mean, it's a problem, but you do something about it. Figure out what to do differently. I'll tell my students, do a post-game analysis, right? Let's say this lecture, it went awful, right? It was just terrible. You walk out of here knowing less than when you walked in. And you told me so. Okay, so I might not be super excited about that fact. But what I should be doing is, the second I walk out, I should be taking notes and saying, okay, well, what can I do differently next time? What are the points that I should have presented better? And that's having a growth mindset, saying, how can I learn from the experience and do it differently? And that's something I think that's important that those very facts, which are to catch our kids, catch ourselves saying these fixed ideas. Saying these trait ideas, and instead trying to show them that it's really a state. It's really something that's growth. I believe as a very much as a practitioner, as a clinician, what I call reverse Breslov. Rav Nachman says that if you believe that you can break something, you have to believe that you can fix it, right? And if you believe, I think the doctors would, right? If you're a doctor, you should believe this also. That any medicine, any substance that can, if you believe that you can break something, you should believe you can fix it. Rav Nachman said this in order to be able to promote hope in people. I believe the reverse is also true. Whereas if you believe that something can help you fix something, you have to believe that can also help you to break it. I think here also the growth mindset should have a risk. Right? What's the risk potentially of believing that any mistake you make can just be fixed? Right? If I don't do well in something, I can just turn it around. Is there a downside to that? Okay. So the criticism was that it's an overfocus on effort. That people tend to say is that you make a mistake, so we're sort of de-emphasizing the outcome. Right? You made a mistake? Not a problem. Just go back to the drawing board and do it again next time. Okay? So imagine you're a surgeon, right? Right, exactly. So you don't want to be, they always say, you know, don't get sick in August, because that's when the new interns or the new residents come to the hospital.
July 1st.
What's that?
July 1st, yeah.
Okay, so there's a learning curve. You know, I work at the hospital, they say, you know, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. Okay, so you don't want to be the guy's first omelet. That's fine. What you don't want to be is basically the guy that you don't want to be over focused on effort. We say in Birchot HaTorah, the bracha for Torah is lasok b'divrei Torah, or we say the Ashrei Misha Amal b'Torah. Right? It's in Torah. It could be that we do focus on effort. That the goal is to pound and to work as hard as you can. And understanding maybe isn't the only thing, that the only metric. However, I would say is that even in Torah, I don't think it's necessarily true. I don't think we really believe that. I don't think we really believe that you should just go into base ministry and work hard and walk out with nothing, and then you should be get a big shkach and make a seal. I don't think that's true. I think the effort is very important, but it's certainly not the only thing that's important. The outcome is important too. I think the here, and take one step further, which is, does growth mindset promote or prevent tshuva?
One of the aspects of tshuva is that when you're in the same predicament the second time, you make a different choice.
Right. So if you believe that I'm fixed, then the answer is I can't make a different choice, right? Because I'm going to make the same mistake next time. Right? Growth mindset says that I can do things differently. So that's harata. That's a hakarat hachi. That's excellent. Again, part of the criticism is that if you if everything is growth, right? I don't have to worry about it, because so I killed the guy. I'll do better next time. So I spoke to Lashon Hara. No problem. I'll get him next time. Right? I didn't get up for Shacharis. No problem. I'll get him next time. I woke up, slept over. I've seen this, right? I missed Shabbos the last 100 days. Okay, it's always day 101. And at some point, you have to, it's not just about the fact that you can grow, you should grow, but it's something more to it. And I think the other part, which I think is missing, is this idea of grit. Grit is not a new word, but it was popularized by someone, Dr. Angela Duckworth, who's a psychologist at Penn. She's the guru of grit. And she defines grit as passion and perseverance, in particular for long-term goals. Perseverance means stamina, effort, particularly when you try to do something hard, day in and day out, despite setbacks. Passion is about stamina in things that you're interested in, being committed to something and staying committed to it over a long time. She conducted hundreds of interviews with people that she called paragons of grit, and longitudinal studies of children and adults. She found was that grit, meaning hard work, sticking to something, being passionate about things, predicted success much more than talent did. If you look at the equation they have at the bottom of the page here, she says that skill is really a function of talent, meaning, let's say, what your inborn traits, combined with effort. Talent, people don't succeed on talent alone. Again, sports is the best analogy. If you look at the people at the highest level of sports or even academia, these people they're all very talented, but talent is not enough. I can't tell you how many people, think about our own lives. How many people did you know growing up that were these unbelievably talented, these early stars, but the guys that were lazy, that didn't also put in the hard work, they just didn't make something of themselves. And she points out that she thinks that achievement, again, that's what gets you to skill, but she thinks that achievement is a function of taking that skill and, again, putting in effort, and that's what gets you to the outcome, to performance, to achievement. For those math-oriented people out there, if you have two equations and skill appears, effort appears twice in them, it means, again, that it's doubly important, because it's a component of skill in and of itself. And again, even you have to then take your skill and combine it with more effort, and that's what brings you to outcome. So how do you teach, again, it should be tachlis, how do you teach grit? So she says that grit is made up of four components, that it's passion, practice, purpose, and hope. I don't have a lot of time left, but I'll try to, in the time we have. So the first thing is passion. So passion is have a fire for something, have drive for something. I think a lot of people out there find that they're not super excited about something, but when, personally, I know that I was not, as a kid, I was not super motivated. Maybe I got too much praise early on, but I know that once I hooked onto something, found something I was excited about, all of a sudden I discovered I wasn't actually lazy. And it's this fascinating, like, you get turned on and you say, wow, I don't mind working hard, I like working hard on things. And I think when you have a passion for something, you find that you have this drive that you can go really fast, really far. The problem, again, is that we tend to, as educators and as parents, we tend to tell your kids, okay, go find passion, get passionate about something. It's worthless. Right? How do you find passion? So what I tell my students is a pasuk from Kohelet. Look at the bottom page of that too. It says, "Baboker zraz arecha v'erev al tanach edecha." I mean, you have to work hard in the morning, and you have to work hard in the evening. Ki ein chaya, again, it's a famous idea, but the rest of the pasuk is less famous. The rest of the pasuk is, "Ki ein chaya yodea e ze yichshar." Hazeh ozeh. Because why? Why do you have to work hard in the morning and also plant in the morning and also plant in the evening? The truth is because you don't know what's going to work. Right? It could be the stuff you planted early is going to work. It could be the stuff you plant later is going to work. You don't know. Or maybe they'll both be great, and that's fantastic. But you just don't know. You got to try your hand at a lot of things, and unless you do that, you really have no way to discover what you're passionate about. So again, especially for young kids, try your hand at a lot of stuff. Right, have your kids try your hand a lot of different things to discover what is it exactly that they're passionate about.
The health coach says, find your why, find the reason. You know, if a parent, your parent passed away at an early age, you know, you're going to make changes in your life because you know you want to outlive your father.
Exactly, I mean, you got to find a passion. Again, so the next step is. And this is the most, I think the first and most important, but the next step is practice. Is that, again, it's not enough to have passion about something, but if you don't practice, and she particularly points something called, we don't have time to discuss it in detail, something called deliberate practice. Deliberate practice is famous for being the practice that everybody hates, meaning putting in the grunt work. If you look to someone named Dr. Anders Ericsson at Florida State University, I recommend you look him up. Fascinating idea about how exactly put in this really, really hard, deliberate practice, things that are concentrating on a single task, getting feedback, again, it's not fun. Right? Why should people put in this hard practice? Again, that's why you have to first find something you're passionate about. If people tell you to put in this hard work about something you're not passionate about, it's really, really difficult. She actually makes a... okay, let's go through the other two quickly, and then we'll close with an idea, which is that she says that the third idea is something called purpose. Meaning, if you have purpose in what you're doing, the successful people are those that also have something that's beyond themselves. Right? Why did Yaakov not mind to work really hard for Rachel? For 7 years. It says, "Vayavod Yaakov Rachel sheva shanim, vayu be'inav ki amim achadim ba'ahavato uta." Right? Yeah, he didn't care how long it was because he was passionate, right? Because he had purpose. He knew what he was doing it for. And the last idea is, and again, I recommend you also look up Viktor Frankl, this idea that people tend to not mind suffering if they know what it's for, if they feel that it's for, has some purpose behind it, has meaning behind it. Excellent book, Man's Search for Meaning. And the last idea is hope. Because I think this is something that is true the whole way around, which is that if you have no hope that this is going to work, then it doesn't work out. There's something called a virtuous cycle. It's the opposite of a vicious cycle. A virtuous cycle means that you believe that it can work. You do it. It actually works. And then it gives you more encouragement that things are going to go forward, keep going forward. The opposite is more like a self-fulfilling prophecy of negativity, meaning that you believe it's not going to work. It doesn't work probably because you didn't put any effort to make it work. And then you say, oh, see, I told you so. I mean, the guy that says, I'll never do better in math, He doesn't believe he'll do well in math. He doesn't put an effort to do in math. He, of course, when the next math test comes around, he doesn't do well. And then he says, see, I told you so. Right? Nothing better than telling your parents, I told you so. So we'll close with two quick ideas. One of them is, Dr. Duckworth recommends something called the hard thing rule. The hard thing rule is that you should, for example, have your kids every year take on something hard, something that's beyond them, something that they don't know how to do that's going to take a lot of hard practice, and that's something that's beyond them. Every year, forbid them, right? They may not quit until the end of the semester or until the end of the course. It's also not just the money issue, but they may not quit until the end of the course. And number three is they can quit at the end of the year or the end of the course, and not move on to level two, whatever it is. But they can only do so if they're willing to have a replacement, meaning that if they hate ballet and now they want to switch, they can't quit ballet until they find, fine, I'm going to switch to trombone or basketball or, you know, dafyomya. But something else that's really difficult, like that's beyond them. By the way, and the most important thing is they have to pick it, right? You can't pick this thing for them. And the last idea we'll close with is that people tend to want to believe that these things are inborn, right? We tend to, there's something called the genius effect. The genius effect says that we like to believe that people that are geniuses, right, that are different than us. It's just a different breed, a different animal, right? Why? So psychologists want to try to claim that it's useful to us to believe that talent is inborn. Because if I believe that the guy that's the math genius, the guy that's the CEO, the guy that's the head of the hospital, right, that he does really well and he got this position because he's just got it, there's something about him that I don't have, then that is, it's a pator, right? I mean, I don't have to work hard, right? Because I can't achieve that anyway. But by believing that the truth that I can actually get to that level also if I just put in the effort is in what we call in Gemara, it's a mechayev. It's something that obligates me, right? And that's the problem. She was a doctor, was actually a big fan of Nietzsche. He's a pretty cool guy also. But they believe this idea that there's this complicit agreement between the performer and the Nietzsche believes complicit agreement between the performer and the audience, where the audience wants to believe that the performer is doing this effortless because it makes it more enjoyable, and the performer also again wants to make it seem like they're so passionate what they're doing that it's effortless also. But the truth is that no one gets to the level of a high level performer or anything that any person that has talent in their field. That unless they put in a tremendous amount of effort, and I think all people that I know that are successful, they all work really, really hard. Again, you don't necessarily see it when they're doing it. Again, all the people that are speaking today, no one here knows how many hours or days they put in. People put into it, and again, maybe the mark of a good performance, a good shiur, is that you don't know how much went into it. But the truth is, you can rest assured that anything that's good, there was a lot of effort that went behind it. And I think it's important for our kids that, you know, we tend to not show our kids our warts. We tend to show them that, like, you know, our problem, I got this, you know. But I think there's a part of it which is that you should reveal yourself to your kids a little bit, right? Lower your mask a little bit and show your kids how hard you had to work to get to where you are today. I had my kids say, oh, I can't do what you did because you're so smart. I don't have the talent that you have. Which again, I think that sometimes it's just a convenient way for kids to mean that they shouldn't have to put in the hard work. But we can also, parents, not be afraid to say, no, I'm now different than you are. I had to work really hard to get to wherever it is that I am. And unfortunately, I got to keep working hard to get even further. And just to summarize, I think this is a Mishnah. Right? Then what's the Mishnah? It says, Lo alecha amachalik mor, lo atah ben chorin lehibatel mimena. Which means it's our job is not to finish anything, right? There's no idea of a fixed mindset. Once I've got it made, right? That doesn't exist because the job is not to finish, right? So the work is our job is to always grow to be a whole life. The second half of the Mishnah is that's not good enough. It's lo atah ben chorin lehibatel mimena, which means you got to keep working all the time. You got to put in the grit. You got to put in the hard work all the time. Because at the end of the day, Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to, the Tashbetz on this mission is a very nice idea. He says that at the end of the day, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to ask you, you know, what your score is, how many blot you did, how much you accomplished. But the goal is good. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is ultimately going to ask you is how hard have you worked? Right? God is mechayev ala batala. Ultimately, God's going to give it to ask you, well, you know, you wasted all this effort. And Dr. Black points out that people with a growth mindset, they're not afraid of not achieving something. They're afraid of missed opportunities. They're afraid of that they could have potentially done something and not having achieved it. Again, until we're Moshe, as Tzadik pointed out, we'll never know how far it is because you know the game's only over when you're in the ground. But the bottom line is, our job is to ultimately keep working. As they say in Israel, Nishan Bakever means that at the end of the game, they don't know how many points I racked up. And then I looked back and do my post-game analysis. Until then, I got I need to be run as far as I can, as fast as I can, and keep working. So I get to work.